It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
If the president did that today, because he has some reason to serve that other country rather than our own, then a lot that has previously been inexplicable is now explicable. And that's the worst case scenario.
It's just as serious to me as the Cuban Missile Crisis in terms of an attack or the 9/11 attack. His performance today will live in infamy as much as the Pearl Harbor attack or Kristallnacht.
When do we see almost a shadow government come out and say, we cannot side with the government, whether it's the cabinet or the Senate? I think that's the big question.
You stood next to that man and you said it and gave the middle finger to America.
That's right.
We now have to figure out how to deal with a president of the United States who wittingly or unwittingly has been compromised. What we saw yesterday was collusion, witting or unwitting, in the president's words and attitudes toward Putin.
The president looked like a weak, dumpy stooge to a KGB spy. He had a chance to show loyalty to the men and women in uniform of America's military and intel community, and instead he betrayed them.
Somebody needs to make it clear to President Trump that his behavior in that press conference was un-American, outrageous, ridiculous, stupid.
You had a one-word reaction to what you saw yesterday. Treason.
Treason, yeah.
All righty then. Sandy Rios back with you. Well, there's the media for you, and that's what you've been hearing for the last 24, 36 hours since President Trump and Vladimir Putin had their press conference in Helsinki. Sandy Rios back with you and happy to be. And, of course, that's what we're going to talk about today because we must. It's not the first time something like this has broken out in the news media, and immediately the response is that the Republican leadership gets out, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. Oh, yes, yes, and they're right, and we don't feel that way, and this is the way it goes. This is the propaganda machine in full motion, and I want to talk to you about it today because my question to you personally is, did you watch it? Did you watch the president's statement and Vladimir Putin's statement? Did you watch the interaction? There were four reporters, two Russian, two American. There were questions, two questions each for each leader. And the answers, it was very interesting. It was fascinating. And if you just listen to the press, our president is weak and dumpy. He's the stooge of Vladimir Putin. Why, what happened in that press conference was the same as the Cuban Missile Crisis by Kristallnacht, when the Nazis began to actually attack the Jews openly, not just shun them, but attack them. It's just like that. That's what happened. If you didn't see it, you missed it, because it was that bad. It was like, you know, the Russians bringing missiles toward our southeastern shore to unleash fury on us. It was the same thing, right? Well, evidently, Republican leadership thinks so because they had to rush out in front of the mics and agree. But I'm telling you, you're being played. We are being played. If you don't look at the information firsthand without the filter of anyone, Fox News, me too. I mean, here's the thing. If you trust someone on Fox, you can't trust everyone on Fox. You have to figure out who it is that you can trust, and then their perspective is important. I think you listen to me. A lot of you listen to me because you can't stand me and you don't like anything I say. And I'm glad you're listening. A lot of you listen to me because you trust me. And I hold that trust as sacred. And so I'm going to do my best to walk you through what I think happened. I can't cover all of it, but I'll do my very best. Let me just remind you, if you want to look at the overarching things that are incriminating for the claims, remember that the president spent time in NATO first. And what did the press say about that? He was too tough. How embarrassing. How embarrassing that he should call Angela Merkel out on taking oil supplies, energy supplies from Russia to this pipeline when Russia is not to be trusted. Why would you do that to your country, Angela Merkel? And all this immigration, Theresa May, this is not a good thing. And the Brexit you're proposing is not a good thing. And what did the press say? Oh, my gosh, he's too tough. How dare he say these things? How dare he embarrass our allies? How dare he do that? And, of course, the criticism for his remarks with Theresa May, just that was the next level of it. How dare he talk to her about Brexit? How dare he, was the Daily Mirror, I think, in London that misquoted some of the things that he said to Theresa May. This is the way it goes. Because, of course, the international press hates him. And, of course, our press hates them because they're all on the same page. They love, I don't know what to call it. They love socialism. They love the left. Our press, our admirers, lovers, absolutely apoplectic over the beauties of Italy and England and France, France. It's just why can't we be more like them? And we're watching, Europe. We're seeing what's happening to them based on their ridiculous decisions. The European Union has become a godless, mindless body that has placed Europe in turmoil by forcing them to take immigrants from all over the world without any kind of vetting. They've just been invaded. And that's what President Trump was talking about. But in those cases, he was just too, how embarrassing that he should speak like that to those leaders. How dare he? And now he's a weak and dumpy, stooge of Vladimir Putin. And that has to be, of course, because according to the AP reporter, which now I'm skipping to one of my points that I wanted to make later. The last, we had two, one was a Reuters reporter and the other was, I believe, AP. And these are the questions he asked. At the end of the press conference, can you tell me what President Trump may have indicated to you about officially recognizing Crimea as part of Russia? So not really a question for Vladimir Putin, but a potential. Man, if you could just tell me that he didn't. This is the thing that Americans are pretty upset with Russia about. And if you could just tell me, did Trump bring that up? That weak president who's sort of flirting with you? And the second question then was, sir, to Vladimir Putin in this press conference, does the Russian government have any compromising material on President Trump or his family? This is the question that this reporter for AP chose to ask. Vladimir Putin laughed in his face. And so he said, yes, of course, Crimea is very important. And President Trump's position is very well known on that. And as to the other part, and he gave his answer about... He said, I hardly even knew who he was before he became president. Those reports about the dossier about him being in Russia, he was one of hundreds, maybe even thousands of business persons who traveled to Russia doing business. We were not surveilling all of them. That's ridiculous. So, but that's how the press decided to, that's how this started. And then, of course, the president's response about his, what was the question? Let's see. Do you support, I want to find it exactly. Basically, do you trust your, let's see, okay, I'll read it exactly. This is from Jonathan Lemire from the AP. A question for each president. President Trump, you first. Now, just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. My first question to you, sir, who do you believe? And my second question is, the whole world's watching. Will you now, please, right now, at my urging, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016? Would you warn him never to do it again? So these are the questions that caused President Trump to be called this weak and dumpy, stooge of President Putin. First of all, the lack of understanding about diplomacy. You don't go to a foreign country, especially even an enemy, and stand on a stage with them and denounce them, for the sake of the press, to give a photo op, to give a soundbite. That's not diplomacy. That never has been diplomacy. It's a ridiculous question. And the other question, do you trust, every intelligence agency has concluded Russia interfered. Do you trust, sir, who do you believe? Do you believe President Putin or do you believe your intelligence agencies? And, of course, you have to fill in the blank. Let's see. Let's ask it this way. President Trump, do you believe Vladimir Putin or do you believe Peter Strzok? Do you believe Vladimir Putin or do you believe James Comey? Do you believe Vladimir Putin or do you believe John Brennan, who led the CIA? Oh, let's listen to John Brennan because he weighed in on this. He's the former CIA director. Let's just listen to what he had to say about this.
I think there's a big question, first of all, in terms of those who are on Mr. Trump's national security team, whether they can continue to serve in good conscience an individual who basically betrayed his nation. What Mr. Trump did yesterday was to betray the women and men of the FBI, the CIA, NSA, and others, and to betray the American public. And that's why I use the term that this is nothing short of treasonous, because it is a betrayal of the nation. He is giving aid and comfort to the enemy, and it needs to stop. And Mr. Trump needs to understand that there are going to be consequences for him, too.
Well, John Brennan would know a lot about giving aid and comfort to the enemy since he voted for the Communist Party candidate in 1980. And let's just not say he was just a kid and didn't know what he was doing. He was in his 30s. He knew exactly what he was doing. But, you know, but President Trump is a traitor. This is a treasonous offense. So back to the question. Well, do you trust Vladimir Putin or John Brennan, the head of the CIA, who was running the show during the election? Who do you trust, President Trump? So this is the setup. This is the dilemma that they created. And of course, the president didn't give the answer that people are reporting. Honestly, let's see. Let me give you his exact response because I think you need to hear it. So President Trump, so let me just say that we have two thoughts. You have groups that are wondering why the FBI never took the server. He's talking about the DNC server. And that doesn't make sense to people if they're not following the details, but I'm going to go into that in a minute. Why haven't they taken the server? Why was the FBI told to leave the office of the Democratic National Committee? I've been wondering that. I've been asking that for months and months, and I've been tweeting it out and calling it out on social media. Where is the server? I want to know where it is. With that being said, all I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me, and some others. They say they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this, I don't see any reason why it would, now he says he meant wouldn't be, but I really do want to see the server. But I have confidence in both parties. I really believe that this will probably go on for a while, but I don't think it can go on without finding out what happened to the server. What happened to the servers of the Pakistani gentleman that worked at the DNC? Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they? What happened to Hillary Clinton's email? 30,000 gone. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people. Oh, did anybody report that? Did anybody mention that he said that? I think they left that out. I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is he did an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with Russian investigators with respect to those 12 Russians indicted. I think that's an incredible offer, okay? Thank you. All right, so based on that, now we have the press going apoplectic, and they are. I'm going to give you more illustrations of that. We have all of the national security leaders who the president now is supposed to magically trust, James Comey, John Brennan, Peter Strzok, Andrew McCabe. The list goes on. I mean, he should trust them, right? Do you trust them or Vladimir Putin? Well, I kind of like to ask you that question. Who would you trust? Right, so the point is the president didn't really say what they're accusing him of saying. He just didn't say, oh, yes, whatever they say, I believe, because he can't say that because he shouldn't say that. None of us should believe the nonsense that they've tried to perpetrate on the American people. And so it was a Sophie's Choice question, but I think the president actually did an excellent job answering it. I have no problem with it, and I'm going to lay the groundwork again now a little bit more when we come back. I want to talk to you about, first of all, like the history of Russia and the United States and this spying, our relationship. I think I need to because, again, I think that sadly we have not been well educated and memories are short. And so hang with me. I'm going to give you some information that you might not get elsewhere, not compiled in this way. And I'm going to do my best to faithfully give you some background so you can make choices. Plus, we're going to put stuff on our Facebook page this morning to help you. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. I had the honor and privilege of sitting down with a good friend and former Marine, a Vietnam veteran, to record an interview which he hopes will bless his children and grandchildren when they wonder what it was like when he was growing up, and particularly when he was in the military. What stands out most when you have a conversation with a seasoned veteran like my friend is the despair over what the country that they fought for, that they've watched friends die for, is becoming. They sacrifice so much to keep America safe and free, while our leaders make foolish decisions which leave us so vulnerable. They witness violence and war so that we could remain innocent, yet we are guilty of so much. I know that Memorial Day is behind us and Veterans Day is a long way off, but let's check ourselves. Are we living worthy of the sacrifices that have been made for us? This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Should American churches sing the Star-Spangled Banner? 61% of Protestant pastors say it's important to celebrate God and country. As a matter of fact, the other Sunday, my church sang the national anthem, as well as God Bless America, and a good many hymn books include all sorts of patriotic songs. But a growing number of Christian leaders say it's wrong to pledge allegiance to the flag inside the church house. The Gospel Coalition's managing editor posted a tweet urging churches to cancel patriotic worship services. This from the reporting of the Washington Post. I find such criticism flawed. There's nothing wrong with thanking God for blessing America, for providing us a nation where we can practice our faith without having to worry about getting hauled off to jail. That's a blessing worth shouting glory, glory, hallelujah on Sunday mornings. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Can we still call President Trump the leader of the free world? Can we still call him the leader of the United States?
All he had to do was not, you know, put on jammies and crawl under the covers with Vladimir Putin, and he couldn't do that.
I have never seen an American president simply surrender to the leader of Russia. You should call this the Surrender Summit.
The definition it meets is the first word of the impeachment article in the Constitution, which is treason, bribery, and high crimes and misdemeanors.
We all know that Vladimir Putin is holding something over Donald Trump. We do not know what it is, but we know it must be something extraordinary.
Yeah, so there you go. That's what's happening. Of course, that's true. You know, it has to be true. There must be more video. There must be another dossier. There must be something. It can't possibly be nothing because we've been talking about it for 2 years nonstop. It just has to. It has to be something, right? The national security leaders, you know, James Comey and James Clapper and John Brennan and all the others, they've been telling us and the reporters have been telling us, and we have to find something, right? It's just very ironic, isn't it, that Bob Mueller should, or that Rod Rosenstein should have announced the indictment of about 12 Russian national security or, you know, intelligence agents who allegedly were the ones that hacked a DNC server. I have to tell you, that's very unusual. The Justice Department, I can tell you, has limited resources, and it is not their practice to indict people who they will never bring in country to charge and to run through the court system. That's not going to happen. So it's kind of it was an exercise in obfuscation. It was an exercise in derailing what had just happened with Peter Strzok's, you know, testimony the day before. The timing is just amazing. And some of my friends, national security friends, and I don't know if this is true, but one is alleging that the Mueller team had a copy of a list of Russian intelligence agents and just copied and pasted and used the names. This person doesn't believe they had any information on that. So, of course, Vladimir Putin has called Mueller's bluff on this. He's saying, bring your team over here, your 13 DNC supporters, your 13 Hillary Clinton advocates, both financially and also actively working for her campaign, all 13. Bring them over. And we'll work with you, and we will interrogate these agents, and you can watch and take notes, and so that we can, you know, work together to find out what the truth is here. But methinks you're not going to hear. I don't think Bob Mueller's going to take them up on that. He's already handed that very big fine that he had over to someone else to investigate. He's not going to do it. But the announcement was made just the day after Peter Strzok did his disgraceful testimony before Congress. So we all know how this works, don't you? You know by now how this works, don't you? I want to tell you more things. This Angelo Codevilla has been a guest with us. He is a highly respected diplomat. He's an older man now and lives out in the West Coast. But he wrote about his take on the summit. And I just want to read to you just a couple of things he said. The highly professional quality of Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin's performance at their Monday press conference in Helsinki contrasts sharply with the obloquy by which the bipartisan U.S. ruling class showcases its willful incompetence. Though I voted for Trump, I've never been a fan of his, and I'm not one now. But having taught diplomacy for many years, I would choose the Trump-Putin press conference as an exemplar of how these things should be done. Both spoke with frankness and specificity of serious business. This performance rates an A+. Both presidents started with basic truth. And then Angelo ends with this. What the ignorant journalist, he's talking about the AP reporter, was demanding of Trump, precisely what the credentialed experts should know better than to have demanded, was that the president of the United States scream at the president of Russia for all his evils. Competitive viral signaling has become the way of political life in America, to the extent that it bleeds into America's foreign policy. We are all in big trouble. So that was not a serious, those are not serious questions. They were gotcha questions for the president of the United States. It was not really hard to figure that out. And by the way, we're going to put a link to the entire statements of both presidents. Then the reporters, if you want to fast forward to the end and just listen to the reporters' questions, it might be worth that. I just think it would be, you should see it yourself. Just to see if you agree that this was Kristallnacht. This was the Cuban Missile Crisis. This was a disaster. Just listen to the press. That's what they want to tell you. This was treason, says John Brennan. All right, so I want to go now. I want to give a little background here. You know, Russia has been our enemy since the Bolsheviks took power in the early 1900s and killed Alexander the First. That's when this all started. And even though we weren't declared enemies, ideologically, that's when the split took place. Because before that, Russia was in the broadest sense of this use of this term, a Christian nation. The Russian Orthodox Church was central. It was a state church, like, you know what I mean by state. You know, it was like England's state church or Germany's Lutheran church. It was the state church. So I'm not saying it was, strong spiritually. But the principles were there. The biblical principles were there. That's what the old Russia was like until the Bolsheviks came and then annihilated any mention of God, and people that believed in him were, killed and imprisoned. So for 60, 70 years, Russia was godless. But then let me go back a little bit, because after we did cooperate with them during World War II, they were allies of ours under Stalin. Stalin, meanwhile, was murdering his own people brutally. If you've never seen the story of Stalin, his rise to power, could I commend you, go to Netflix, go to someplace and just Google it, because it is gripping. It will help you remember why we must fight so hard for freedom. So Stalin was a tyrant. He was a bloody tyrant. He murdered his own people. He was godless. He'd gone to seminary, by the way. And so he was the worst kind of type of evil because he understood God, he understood scripture, and he used it against his own people to murder them in just unbelievable ways. It is a tragic story of Russian history, and it set them on a course of just despair. And what we have in Russia now at this point, the godlessness that we see coming out of Russia is, you know, at the hand of Lenin. And then also of Stalin and others, but those are the two, we'll just mention them first. So Russia was our ally during World War II, but immediately, even during World War II, there's an interesting press conference where Winston Churchill and Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Stalin are featured sitting in chairs. And I think, I'm not sure who says first, it might have been Churchill. But he said something about how we are thanking God for his intervention. Roosevelt agreed, yes, we thank God for his intervention to help us. And then Stalin says, I don't thank God, I thank Satan. And so this is who we were dealing with. Churchill was very wise to that. So meanwhile, Stalin, as the war was coming toward the end, was marching through Eastern Europe and snatching up territory left and right. And we just let him do that. And it was actually then the Russians who marched into Berlin and, you know, exercised their brutality. It was vengeance for the way the Germans had treated the Russians. I understand human nature. I get that. But they took, you know, half of Berlin. They took half of Germany. And Eisenhower allowed this. We always rush to peace. But the Russians had something else in mind, and that was the beginning of the Cold War. And, of course, then the wall was built in Berlin, and then we entered this period of just terrible, terrible standoff where Russia had all these nuclear capabilities, and so did we. The Cuban Missile Crisis was kind of one of the many low points of that where we thought they were going to attack us through Cuba, and the whole world was just couldn't breathe for like 10 days, 2 weeks, because we thought we were going to be attacked. There was a standoff. We thought I can't get side-railed on that, but let me just say that there was, when I was growing up, you know, we used to have drills, nuclear drills, because we thought the Russians were going to attack us. Nikita Khrushchev in 1956, I think, had taken off his shoe and beaten it on the podium of the UN saying, we will bury you, talking to us, we will bury you. We were enemies, cold, fast enemies. And no one traveled into Russia, very few people, and no one got out. And that was the same, let me just say, that's the way it was even in the 80s. That's why it's interesting that so many of our Democratic leaders, Bill Clinton was in Russia. That's strange. That was strange. As a young student, we know that Barack Obama's mom loved Russia, studied Russia. He was mentored by a Russian communist sympathizer, Frank Marshall Davis, who was on the FBI watch list. That was President Obama's mentor. President Obama had a romance for Russia, and I'm going to give you an illustration of that. He had a very romantic view of Russia. But let me just say, we were in a complete standoff with Russia for all of these years. And finally, of course, the reason that it thawed was because of Ronald Reagan, because of, they imploded economically. And so in the 90s, the thing began to thaw. I was one of the first people that went to Moscow, actually, did a radio broadcast from Radio Moscow in 1990. And that was amazing. We were the first Americans to ever broadcast from Radio Moscow. Boy, was that something. And so we entered sort of a period of openness, they called it glasnost, where Americans flooded to Russia. And there were a lot of Christians who flooded, a lot of Christian ministries, understanding this was a window of time. The people were lost and confused. They had been taught that there was no God for 70 years, and they were just, it was like they were stunned to be hearing information. I remember interviewing a neurologist, Dr. Clara Labadinskaya, who talked to me about the autistic children she was working with and gave me all the evolutionary reasons why she thought children were autistic. And then she said, just shocked me to death, at the end of it, she looked off away from me and she said, but we are beginning to think that maybe there is a God. This was Russia in the 90s. And so lots of people did business. Most savvy businessmen rushed over there to do business. And there was nothing untoward about it. It was a new period. But in the midst of it, Russia began to implode economically. And the crime, you know, freedom in Russia was not like freedom in the United States. Freedom in Russia without God created chaos. So all the oligarchs started raping Russia of its natural resources, enriching themselves. The people were struggling. The economy was terrible as it had been. And there was no hope because there wasn't enough understanding of God, and certainly not enough to influence the country in a good way. And so enter Vladimir Putin, who had been a former KGB leader. Vladimir Putin took over and began to sort of instill some of the old communist principles, even though on paper they're a democracy, he began to rule like an autocrat, which is what they were used to. He began to restore confidence because they felt, something like the Germans after World War II, the Russians felt badly about themselves because communism had imploded and they didn't know who they were. They felt lost. And their bluster and their rule in the world and their pride in their military and their nuclear capabilities had gone. It was just gone. So Vladimir Putin offered them pride in their country. But reinstilled many of the old communist methods. And it was their natural bent. And so I think the Russian people sort of went toward that because they were flailing. So that's an overview of Russia and where we are today. But here's the thing. Interestingly enough, the Democrats have always had strong relationships, not just with Russians, but with communist Russians. And I want to give you a taste of it. Capital Research Center just did a video, which I think is very effective. We're going to make this available on our Facebook page, too. And I want you to listen just a little bit of it. It'll walk you through some of the connections that you need to know about. Let's listen.
Unprecedented. The New York Times, The Guardian newspaper, and CNN, over and over, have proclaimed Russian meddling in the 2016 election unprecedented. House Democrats called it an unprecedented attack by Russia. Former Director of National Intelligence James Clapper said, "We have never encountered such a direct campaign to interfere with the election process." But is Russian interference in our elections really so unprecedented? And if it isn't, why are so many influential individuals talking about it like it is? In 1948, the Russians backed the Progressive Party presidential campaign of former Vice President Henry Wallace, arguably affecting the outcome of that year's election. In 1956, President Eisenhower demanded the Russians stop meddling and stop their foreign interference in the election. They were supporting Eisenhower's opponent, Adlai Stevenson. In 1960, the Russians offered to fund Stevenson's campaign if he would run for president again. Later, the Russian premier bragged that, by refusing to release a captured U.S. pilot, the Russians threw the 1960 election to President Kennedy. In 1968, the Russian ambassador had breakfast with the Democratic nominee for president at his house and offered to fund his campaign. In 1976, the Russians tried to torpedo the presidential campaign of a major candidate, Senator Henry Jackson, by spreading rumors he was gay. That year, they had a spy in a campaign briefing conducted by the Democratic nominee, Jimmy Carter. It got so bad that in 1984, the Heritage Foundation issued a report entitled, "How Moscow Meddles in the West's Elections." The news media ignored that report. They just didn't think Russian meddling was important. And in 2012, while Republicans were warning of the Russia threat, President Obama asked the Russians for help. He was caught on an open microphone telling Putin's sidekick, Dmitry Medvedev, that he would have more flexibility after the election, but it's important for him, Putin, to give me space. Medvedev told Obama, quote, "I will transmit this information to Vladimir, and I stand with you."
All right, that's just part of that Capital Research video, and we will put that on our Facebook page so that you can watch it and it kind of you can understand it, so you can make the case to others. But you know what? That's not even the whole story. When we come back, I want to tell you about Senator Ted Kennedy, who wanted to be president in 1980, and his outreach to the Russians to try to get them to help him beat Ronald Reagan. It's an amazing story. The Democrats have such deep ties to the Russian communists, and so does our media. So the irony is now that they're trying to turn this upside down. Stay tuned.
There were added that day about 3,000 souls. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The day of Pentecost concluded with 3,000 converts being added to the initial body of 120 believers. Then that 3,120 spent time together daily, going to the temple and interacting in each other's homes. They devoted themselves continually to the apostles' teaching, fellowship, sharing meals together, and praying together. The 3,120 that made up the early church came from Turkey, the Middle East, and Africa, and included Arabs and Romans. In addition to the geographic and ethnic diversity, they also spoke different languages. Yet they were made one family in Christ Jesus. Scripture has the answer to the issues we face today.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
You wish you could stop thinking about it, but you can't. It never quite leaves your thoughts. Even in the joyful moments, it's there. The sadness, shame, and sorrow. You know you can't go on like this, so don't. Phone the International Helpline for Abortion Recovery at 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who's already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
It's often difficult to deal with the problem of pain, but what about the problem of pleasure? When a person pursues and attains all life has to offer, but still struggles, what does that say about the human heart? Find out this week on Let My People Think with Ravi Zacharias.
Let My People Think, Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. Just hit **345. That's **345. **345.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Misdeeds by Peter Strzok and his Confederates do not implicate thousands of other FBI and Justice Department employees, but they have damaged confidence in those agencies. Former CIA Director John Brennan's tweet that comments by President Trump in Helsinki were treasonous is a timely reminder of justified concerns about Obama administration politicization of the wider intelligence community. Mr. Brennan should be careful about casting the first stone. He voted for a communist. As Obama's Homeland Security Advisor, he institutionalized Muslim Brotherhood influence operations inside the U.S. government and endorsed its false claims that jihad is merely holy struggle and that Islam has nothing to do with terrorism. John Brennan's evident enmity towards Donald Trump today was operating when he was in government. It damaged the objectivity and reputation of the organizations he led and discredits him as a critic of the president. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I have full faith and support for America's great intelligence agencies, always had. And I have felt very strongly that while Russia's actions had no impact at all on the outcome of the election, let me be totally clear in saying that, and I've said this many times, I accept our intelligence community's conclusion that Russia's meddling in the 2016 election took place. Could be other people also.
All right, that's the president clarifying his statements because he's under such barrage. He felt a need to do that. And you can understand. I mean, I heard this morning that John Kelly had encouraged Republican leaders to come out and criticize the president. With friends like that, they say, And it is true that President Trump has said several occasions that Russia interfered with the election, and he also has said repeatedly he thinks maybe others were involved as well. And I could play those clips, but I really don't want to take the time to do that. What I want to tell you is I was just playing this montage by a Capital Research Center about the Democrats being deeply involved with Russian communists. They have been for decades. And we're going to put that on our Facebook page so you can read it. I'm also going to have Adam put a written story about what Capital Research Center put in video form. It has more information in it called Russia Meddled and Almost Nobody Cared. Russia Meddled and Almost Nobody Cared. One of the things that Capital Research Center points out is that coming up to current times, the Occupy Wall Street protests, which began in 2011, were heavily supported by the Russians. And it goes into detail about that. Let me just leave it at that. So that's one huge evidence that we know that they've been doing it currently, but usually to help the left. So that's why it's really funny that the left now should turn on the president and insist that the Russians have helped him get elected. And that's, of course, because they are accusing the president of doing what they've been doing for decades. It's a very dangerous game for them, but it's working. And it's like, they just cackle. It's like jackals coming out. It's just amazing. It's amazing. The mob mentality of the media. And then the response of the Republicans is also amazing to me. They run like scared rabbits. You know, we have no one defending the president. He's really on his own. And no one speaking the truth, hardly, except for there are exceptions. I'm going to get to those. But, of course, Rand Paul is speaking out, and also Devin Nunes is. Let's just say Devin Nunes lashed out at U.S. media, accusing 90% of reporters covering the Russian probe of being essentially an arm of the Democratic Party. He said 100%, they, the FBI and DOJ, are putting all their chips on the Republicans losing the House and all these investigations shutting down. Nunes went on to blast the media for its lack of coverage about Republican findings, indicating that senior U.S. officials loyal to the Democratic Party actively worked to open intelligence investigations into the Trump campaign based on a faulty and salacious anti-Trump dossier. The media has been horrible on this situation, whole situation, said Nunes. What we've seen since the election of President Trump has been what's been going on for a long time, but now you see what I call the 90-10 split. This is really serious stuff. In the anti-Trump dossier originally compiled by Fusion GPS, they opened up a counterintelligence investigation into the Trump campaign, and he goes on and on. So we'll be hearing, I'm sure, from more of these of the good guys, which I believe are speaking the truth on this. The conservative editorial page of the Wall Street Journal piled on, called the news conference that President Trump did a national, personal and national embarrassment. Newt Gingrich said it was the most serious mistake of his presidency. You know, you do know, right, that Newt is sometimes great and other times terrible. It's just like Trey Gowdy. It's just a mystery to me how someone can knock it out of the ballpark and then be so misguided. Newt should be sorting people out on this rather than piling on, but he's piling on. And of course, Mitch McConnell piled on too, but I'm not going to bother to read his remarks. But that's the way the Republicans are responding. But let me just tell you that, again, the Democrats have been working with the Russian communists, not just Russia, but the communists, for decades. And I did not get to this, but you have to hear this. Ted Kennedy, in 1984, secretly asked the Soviets to intervene in the 1984 election. This was when he was running against Ronald Reagan. We know this because the KGB secret files were sort of made public in the late 90s, when that glasnost period I told you about, when we were in during that period of time where we had our relationships with Russia was changing. We got a lot of stuff we'd never seen before, and we have the notes of KGB agents and the actual letter that Ted Kennedy wrote asking for their help to defeat Reagan. He had two different suggestions for them. I forgot what he asked them to do, but I'm going to put this article also so you can read it for yourself. Ted Kennedy secretly asked the Soviets to intervene in the 1984 elections. This is an article in 2015. You can find this account in lots of other places, too, but this is one that's handy, and so we'll give it to you. But I think he asked them to send Soviet agents over to, you know, puff up Russia to make Reagan look bad. And when the huffing and puffery goes on among the Democrats, you have to understand they have a long history of allegiance and common thought with Russian communists. That is just the truth. And now we have James Comey, Remember the question, President Trump, do you trust your intelligence agents or agencies, or do you trust Vladimir Putin? Who, sir, do you trust? You say you're trusting, you have to make a choice. Who do you trust? Well, James Comey, the head of the FBI during all of these, that all unfolded in the 2016 election, just tweeted yesterday, "This Republican Congress has proven incapable of fulfilling the founders' design that ambition must counteract ambition. All who believe in this country's values must vote for Democrats this fall. Policy differences don't matter right now. History has its eyes on us." So now I guess he's, making peace at home, because remember his wife and daughters went to the Women's March the day after the inaugural. So James Comey now. But you know what? President Trump should trust him, right? And Peter Strzok and Lisa Page and Andrew McCabe and John Brennan, bless his heart, who voted for the Communist Party candidate and has bragged about it. I think I have audio that I played for you some time ago where he was caught in a recruiting session for potential CIA agents. And he said, don't worry about your past. If you've been involved in, left, used to be, you could not be in the CIA and have been a communist or be involved in these far left groups. It's not the case anymore. Don't worry about it, he said. I've done that, so it's fine. He's actually laughing. That's John Brennan. But, who would you trust, Vladimir Putin or John Brennan? You answer that question. Now, that's the question that President Trump was asked. And then I want to go back to something that was mentioned before. And I didn't even pull the clip on this, but does anybody remember that Mrs. Clinton, as Secretary of State, gave the Russian, I've forgotten his name, but gave them this reset button and made this big splash of this is going to be different. We're going to be different from that icky President Bush. We're going to reset relations. And they laughed and had this cheap little button. And then we find out that Mrs. Clinton was receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars from Russian entities to the Clinton Foundation, that her husband was being paid $500,000 for speeches in Russia. And the kicker might be that Mrs. Clinton oversaw the sale of much of our uranium supply to the Russians. But that somehow didn't make the news. That wasn't a big deal. And then we have Barack Obama as president. And I want to go back and remind you of some of the things that he said. This is a rebuke that he gave to after President Trump, when he was running. Barack Obama came out and just basically said that no serious person thinks that you can rig an election. This whole notion of Russian interference or any other foreign entity coming in and rigging our elections, why, that's just silly. But I'll let you listen to Barack Obama saying it for himself. Let's listen.
There is no serious person out there who would suggest somehow that you could even rig America's elections, in part because they're so decentralized and the numbers of votes involved. There's no evidence that that has happened in the past or that there are instances in which that will happen this time. And so I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
You see, at that time, he thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And so this whole business of Russian collusion, I remember when this started. I remember the moment I was watching television when this started. Jay Johnson, Homeland Security Secretary, made a statement in an interview about Russians interfering in our election. And I remember no one had said anything about it. That's the first time I'd heard it. And I thought, what? What's he doing? What is he doing here? And then he moved to this that we may need to nationalize elections. In other words, to federalize them so that the federal government, that we all trust, can control each and every election in all 50 states. To me, we might have to take over and declare this an emergency. That was the next step. I thought to myself, what are they up to? What are they up to? And that was the beginning of the statement. And of course, then after that, they've just been pounding it. I want you to hear a couple of more things from Barack Obama, and then I have some more important things I want to tell you. All right, so Barack Obama was talking with Dmitry Medvedev and promising. It was off mic. He didn't know he was being heard, and this is clip six. Please listen.
This is my last election, basically. Yeah. After my election, I have more flexibility. Yeah. I transmit this information to Vladimir.
After my next election, Dmitry, I will have more flexibility. Please, I will transmit this to Vladimir, and I stand with you. That's what Medvedev said to him. I'm sure the Russians were helping the Republicans then because, you know, that's what their history was, right? No, actually, their history was in rigging these elections to help the Democrats, just so you know. And so then, of course, during the debate with, you know, I'm going to skip that, but you know that during the debate with Mitt Romney, Obama basically said that Romney said that Russia was the greatest threat. And Obama made some snarky comment, something about the 80s want their foreign policy back, and mocked him. So that's how it went with President Obama. All right, I want to just share with you, this is pretty amazing. This is from Sundance. I often quote him. He's an unknown national security expert. I don't know who this is, but he writes a lot, and people that I trust cite him often. And this is basically what he said. At first glance, yesterday was a very good day. Speaking of Helsinki, he's talking about, might sound like spin, but he said, consider the tweets from James Comey, former FBI, John Brennan, former CIA, Sally Yates, former DOJ, and the statement from Ash Carter, former DOD. John Brennan, Donald Trump's press conference performance in Helsinki rises to and exceeds the threshold of high crimes and misdemeanors. It has nothing short of treasonous. Not only were Trump's comments imbecilic, he is wholly in the pocket of Putin. Republican patriots, where are you? Sally Yates, you remember Sally was the acting attorney general who defied President Trump's executive order on screening Muslims for entry into this country. She was fired. Okay, so that's the Sally Yates. She says, our president today not only chose a tyrant over his own intel community, he chose Russian interests over the country he's sworn to protect. James Comey, this was the day an American president stood on foreign soil next to a murderous lying thug and refused to back his own country. And then Ash Carter, I'm not even going to quote him. He's the guy who gave us transgenders in the military. He's really concerned about American security and principles. That's what he says in his tweet. Okay, so the bigger question, Sundance says, is why would former administration officials feel the need to engage in such discourse? What exactly does their response say about their personal attachment to current events? And what do they all have in common? And then he goes on to say, well, they're all involved in this FISA abuse. And Sundance believes that it all kind of comes down to that because that was the greatest lawless act that these people were all involved in. So is Rosenstein. So is he. He doesn't even list him here. He goes then to talk about the server that the president talked about at the press conference in Helsinki. Now, that was hard because most people don't know what he was talking about. But the DNC server, you would recall, was hacked. But what you might not remember is that the FBI were not allowed by the DNC to go into their server. Instead, the DNC hired an independent contractor called CrowdStrike to go in and figure out for them who hacked their email. Well, CrowdStrike just happens to be up to their ears in Democratic activity. And the FBI, James Comey, I heard him refer to them as a pro. They were real pros. So the FBI didn't do their own research at all. And by the way, the server is, we don't know where it is. That's what President Trump was talking about. Where's the server? Why can't the FBI look at it themselves to determine who did this hacking? Why the mystery all about this? And so what Sundance is saying, that these people are all up to their ears in a lot of things, including the FISA warrants, which were done unlawfully, illegally, have broken many, many laws, have really committed, I think, treasonous acts, and they're running scared. The Russian collusion thing is their hope to try to defeat this president. They're hoping to defeat him in 2020 and defeat the Congress in 2018 so that they can reinstate their power. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.